ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
How do you get along with the parents in your children's friendship group? Some parents may be more permissive than you, or perhaps you're the parent with a more relaxed attitude to curfews, parties, language, being online. When your child has a friend, it means you'll probably need to interact with their parents as well, and they may have different values and rules when it comes to parenting. Sometimes you won't even like the parents or have anything in common except that your children are friends. This can possibly lead to tension and conflict. So I'd like to know how you get along with parents in your children's friendship group when you may or may not be on the same page with each other when it comes to expectations and values as a parent. Have you ever raised issues with other parents, and how has that gone? Teen educator and author Rebecca Sparrow is the host of the upcoming season of ABC podcast Parental as Anything Teens. Welcome to Life Matters, Beck.
Thanks, Beverly. Can't wait to be here.
This is a great topic. We've already got so much response online. Ask you for some advice as well. Beck, tell us about your work in the parenting space first.
Well, I've spent about 20 years mainly working in schools, talking to tweens and teens about friendship, because I think friendship is probably the biggest factor that affects whether or not kids enjoy school. So I'm all about teaching them how to sort of fine-tune their friendship radar so they can choose friends who are good for them, sort of healthy friendships. But I tell you what, this issue about parents getting on with other parents, this is a huge thing that I see coming up to schools, because the teachers are coming up to me saying that parents are causing all kinds of problems.
Wow. Okay. So can you give me some examples?
Sure. So, I mean, this was in a primary school. I'm usually in high schools, but I was in a primary school last year. And one of the teachers said that they'd had a parent go into the playground to confront a primary school child about mean behavior to the other person's child. So they've got parents actually going in confronting kids themselves, which is an issue. We've got, I guess, as well, one of the issues I've seen is in high school, parents saying they're having a big sleepover. Another parent is saying, oh, is it only going to be, you know, all girls, let's say? Yep. The other parent says, yep, it's only going to be all girls at this sleepover. Well, no, there's not actually, boys have been invited. And then there's been perhaps a sexual assault that's happened. So it gets really murky with this idea of a values clash about parents being honest with each other, duty of care. I mean, it's really tricky. So in primary school, it might be things like, are you letting the kids, you know, be on Roblox or something like that? But mm-hmm. in high school, we're looking at things like alcohol, access to porn, sleepovers, co-ed stuff, all of that. So it's tricky. And none of this was in What to Expect When You're Expecting. Gosh. I don't remember this chapter, Beverly.
No, I don't think that they fit that in, even though it's quite a big book. You know, I'm a little bit taken aback hearing about parents confronting children in the playground area. That seems like a little bit much just to me, thinking about how that scenario might go down. So when there is a values clash between parents, like we've just kind of delineated, what often, it sounds, maybe I'll say something and you can tell me how it rings with how it lands with you. It sounds like what escalates that situation is not necessarily what's happening between the kids versus kids, which may have been the initial reason why, but it's the parents who take it to the next level.
Oh, 100%. I would say to you that the issues that we're seeing in schools at the moment are less to do about the kids and far more to do with parents and the way we respond.
Has that changed over time?
Oh, totally. Like if my parents found out that I got in trouble at school, they would have sided with the teacher. Right. What did you do? Okay. You must have deserved that detention. But now we very much have a generation of parents, my generation, who are like, I know my child. They wouldn't do that. I don't believe that. And so it's very interesting. And so even when I see that a child might go home and say, this person was bullying me today, parents are tending to inflame the situation by going, what did they do? I can't believe that. We're going to sort this out. I'm going to ring the school. Or in that case, I'm going to go and speak to that kid, rather than taking a pause and also remembering maybe your child isn't telling you the full story. Maybe you're getting a bit of an airbrushed version where they've kind of airbrushed out their role that they've played. So instead, we're kind of rushing in to defend our children. And I think it's creating all kinds of chaos.
Why do you think that's changed, Beck?
I think that's really interesting, Beverly. I don't know. I do think as a generation of parents, we are uncomfortable with our kids being upset. We don't seem to be able to handle it. Whereas I think our parents' generation were completely comfortable.
Possibly maybe too much that way, yes.
Maybe. Yeah. And maybe as a generation we're overcorrecting that.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that we're far too much trying to not, of course we want to be in our kids' corner, of course we do, and of course we want to advocate for our kids, but we also have to remember kids and teenagers, they screw up. That's part of the job description. Mm-hmm. They're going to make mistakes, and I think we have to remember that the version of our children that we see at home, they may act quite differently at school, and we have to open our minds and think, you know what, maybe my child isn't an angel. Maybe they've done a few things. And it's not about have our kids screwed up, because of course they're going to screw up. It's how we respond as a parent to help our kids course correct. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about.
I'm just going to read a few of the many, many messages that we have received via social media and other scenarios. So we put a call out on the Facebook page for ABCRN asking, when have you clashed with another child's parents? And Narrowly says, my son's friend came to a birthday party at our house, primary school age. He didn't join in the games with everyone else. Instead, he stripped every orange off our tree and threw them at our house wall. I phoned his parents and told them, asked them to come and get him, and they refused, even though it was just a 100-meter walk. So the whole party walked him around there to drop him off. Apart from the dreadful waste of food, the orange pulp dried on the wall and had to be scrubbed off. A later conversation indicated the father had no problem with his son's behavior, but had a real problem with my response. Your house, your rules, my house, my rules was my answer. So that's a flavor. Back to the question that I asked before, which was, you've spoken a little bit about how parents getting involved can escalate things. How does that come back to the kids then? What's the impact on them?
Look, I think it makes, you know, school is our kids' workplace, right? They have to turn up there every day for 5 or 6 hours a day, 5 days a week for years. And I think when parents create drama, mm-hmm. it makes things incredibly uncomfortable for children. And also, our kids can often resolve situations much faster than we realize. They have a disagreement with somebody on one day, a few days later they're over it, but parents can hold on to these things and it creates enormous tension. And that can go on for all the years through primary school or high school.
Right. Whereas the kids have been like, I moved on. What's the issue?
Yeah, exactly. the kids can move on and the parents haven't. That's it.
Why do you think parents are so invested in the social lives of their children? I mean, I understand to a certain extent as a parent, I'm invested in all aspects of my child's life, but that in particular, is it, dare I say it, like what's going on there with the parent, hypothetically?
I don't know. I think it's interesting, but certainly what I've noticed, the difference between when I was at school and current parents is they seem much more invested in socializing together, taking group holidays together.
The parents.
Much more than when I was at school. The parents.
Okay.
And the parents forming friendship groups. I don't think, when I was growing up, I don't think my parents were friendly with my friends' parents in primary school, but they weren't going on grade four camping trips, you know, on the holidays together. So I think the problem there is when parents are also then prioritizing a friendship amongst other parents and they're forcing kids together who don't necessarily like each other. I see that happen quite a lot. So it just adds to more tension, I think. And in the end, we want to be not having to choose between a loyalty to parent friends in grade 3 or grade 7, we want to be, our loyalty has to go to our children. So this is all tricky stuff to sort of navigate, I think, Beverly. So I understand why there's so many problems with it.
Absolutely. Beck, we have quite a few scenarios that have come in via email and via social media. I want to run some past you and just get your take on what's going on there and possibly some solutions. So here's an anonymous one from someone named Elle. They're saying her son and her friend have known each other for a long time. At some point, there was an incident between the boys that meant the boys' parents turned against Elle's son, even requesting that they be put in different classes. The boys are still friends, but the relationship between the parents is still fractured. And the question from the person who's written in is, how do I move forward? I'm not comfortable with play dates now, knowing they're not keen on my son. But of course, I want my son to play with who he wants and who he feels good with.
Look, this is tricky. And I think in an ideal world, if you were able to reach out to the other parents and sort of say, and be open and sort of say, if my child was doing something last year, I would really love to know so that I can address it with them. You know, I'd hate to think that they were either distracting your child in class or leading them astray. And I think what we're seeing is most parents are preferring to just withdraw their children from a friendship rather than maybe speak gently to another parent about an issue, because the response is most likely to be, I don't believe you. I don't believe my child would act that way.
How does a parent withdraw their child from a friendship?
Well, exactly what we're seeing, which is they're saying to their child, I don't want them in the same class. We're going to turn down every play date. That kind of thing. And of course, you can't control necessarily what your child is doing at lunchtime. They're playing together. But I think that what you're doing is making your child completely unavailable to the other child. And I've also seen, I mean, it breaks my heart where I see cases where, and this is so common actually, an entire class is invited to a party except one or two children, which is such a jerk move, Beverly, like that kind of behavior. But I see parents, I don't know whether they're unthinking or they're trying to punish a child, but that kind of thing is not okay to be doing in primary school. You don't do that. Or even in high school, it's less likely in high school. But that kind of behavior, I just see parents behaving really badly. So again, it's not the kids I feel like we should be concerned about, because of course kids are going to do silly things and make bad judgment calls and one day turn up to school and be a bit snarky to other people because they're children and they're learning how to navigate friendship and how to fit in and belong and all of that. But as parents, I don't think we're responding in the best way. And I think that whether we're all overtired and a bit fragile, I don't know, but I think that we are escalating friendship issues in a way that does not need to happen.
Got a message that's come in via email from a teacher, Beck, and you mentioned before that teachers in your experience see that, or there are interventions with teachers. We just had that scenario where one parent even requested that the children be put in different classes. Here's what they've written in. My biggest issues have been about parents' comments about children or students behaving in an unkind manner towards other. One that still fills up some of the brain matter is when an opposition parent dared to loudly comment on one of my students' body sizes while they were competing. As a parent, as an educator, as a human, to loudly and abruptly comment on a 12-year-old female's body made my blood boil. They were undoubtedly the best player, so it was a tactic to embarrass, upset, and humiliate to put them off their game. Gosh, we do hear a lot of pretty outrageous behavior that parents can sometimes engage in sport. They really kind of get the blood up. Beck, what do you think about this kind of scenario? The teacher then obviously has a responsibility. What do you think is going on there? Break this down for us and what should happen?
I mean, you know, that's horrifying, right? Like, at what point did we get to a stage where grown adults are yelling out insults to children playing sport? I mean, that's sad, right? So I think certainly there for the teacher, And this is easy for me to say, and obviously, you know, the teacher's got to look at the situation themselves, but you would really want to be calling out that behaviour of turning around to somebody and saying, that's not appropriate. We don't comment on other people's bodies, that kind of thing. And certainly, I mean, I've had a lot of emails over the last 12 months from parents about other parents yelling out abuse to their kids while they're playing sport. So, you know, you're letting down the team, you're hopeless, get this one in, focus, focus, focus. And a parent is sitting there going, I don't know what to do. They're yelling all of this abuse at my child on court. What should I do? So again, I think this is about boundaries, and it's exactly what I would usually say to children, which is I wouldn't necessarily do it in front of everybody because it's not Real Housewives, but I would usually take a parent away by themselves and say, look, I'm really uncomfortable with how you're speaking to yelling out to my son or daughter on court. It's not appropriate. Or of course you could go to your coach to have that conversation. But generally, Beverly, when we see that there's an issue with friendship, the thing that I advise parents to do, if you feel like you want to contact the other parent and say, you know, there's some bullying going on, or your child's icing my child out, or whatever it is, I think it's a good idea, if you're going to ring the parent, is to say, we seem to have a problem with our children, right? So rather than ringing up and going, your child is doing this, 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 which immediately puts the other parent on the defensive, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's better to sort of say, look, I think we seem to have a bit of an issue with something that's happening with our boys or with our kids, and go in a bit more gently like that. Because as I said, often our kids are giving us an exaggerated one version of the story where they are innocent. They haven't done anything. So I think it's good to keep that in mind and just think, you know, I might not be getting the whole story from my child. And if I feel brave enough to raise it with the other parent, I'm not going to go in all guns blazing.
Yes. Keep it low key. Keep it easy. Stuart in New South Wales, welcome to Life Matters. Tell us your story on this front.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, look, when we were teenagers, you know, my father, I suppose, recognised that prohibition essentially breeds contempt. And, of course, we were contemptuous of certain laws regarding illicit substances. And, you know, we wanted to experiment. And he was kind enough and took the risk upon himself to allow us and our friend group to, you know, do what we needed to do down in the shed. And he took a great risk, because the other parents, you know, would have been very upset had they known that was happening.
Stuart, however, I think I need just a bit more detail about what was happening in the shed, just so we understand, you know, the level of substance you're talking about, if that's okay.
Okay. Yeah, we were smoking weed, okay. You know, so that was it.
I mean, there's a big difference between that and other substances, so I just wanted to clarify and yeah, so we can have a clear picture. Well, that's an interesting decision. Obviously, Stuart, that is going to you're speaking quite warmly about that, but obviously some people listening might think that
absolutely
is creating permissive kind of situation there that could lead to other things.
It was permissive, however, it didn't lead to other things, because he had a handle on who my friends were, and he knew that we weren't smoking with the older kids who were exposed to harder drugs, and some of my friends died as a result of, you know, not having a safe place.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And how did your dad speak to you at your friend group and make sure you were doing things safely? Did he put those guardrails around?
Oh, yeah, he wandered down in his pyjamas sometimes, you know, say g'day to everybody, and just make sure he gave everybody the eyeball. And everyone was very respectful and very thankful. And, you know, in that circumstance, he was incredibly respected by my friend group.
That's a really interesting story. Thank you, Stuart, for sharing that with us. Beck Sparrow, I wonder what your thought is on that, because Stuart's just highlighted a very different kind of values, you know, clash possibly between his dad's attitude towards, you know, cannabis and what some other parents might have thought about that. And that's a really tricky area to wade into, isn't it, when you're providing a space for that. A lot of people may hear that and really disagree with what happened there. But Stuart obviously had a positive view of it.
Totally. Look, I think what's interesting is that the attitudes from decades ago when we were all growing up were probably had the idea that parents allowing kids to have alcohol underage or experiment with smoking marijuana or whatever, or even cigarettes, that was a great parenting thing. Or not even great, but, you know, an okay parenting choice. That you're under a watchful eye of a parent, they're experimenting. But what you would find now is absolutely that does not fly, is what I'm going to say, Beverly, is that the idea of giving access to illegal substances, even alcohol, to kids under the age of, I mean, I'd say 18, but even 16, is not okay, that you can't do that with somebody else's child, that's irresponsible parenting. So that's a really great example of how values and the thought process has changed over decades of what would have been seen in maybe the 70s or 80s as an acceptable thing to do, for parents to turn a blind eye or to sort of think, oh, I'm watching over them while they do this illegal activity. Now, absolutely, that would not be an acceptable thing for parents to be doing at all. You've got a duty of care to children.
So if there is, and like, let's not pretend like we don't live in the world where teenagers do experiment with substances then, and this is a live issue that we should talk about. If this kind of situation does arise in the now, you know, some parents being permissive and some parents obviously not sharing that view, how would you proceed dealing with that particular topic, Beck? What would you say? Who would you talk to? How would you handle that?
Oh, this is the tricky stuff, I think, because I had an email earlier this year about a 14-year-old who the friend's parents were throwing a party and they were putting on a bar for the 14-year-old's birthday party, and they sent round letters to the parents saying we're going to be giving them alcohol.
At 14?
So, yep. And what we're seeing in high school, Beverly, is that there's now a growing division between the parents who don't want their kids drinking alcohol during high school and are trying to create boundaries, and the parents who think, you know, you've got your head in the sand, don't be ridiculous, they're all going to be drinking. And that's creating tension amongst parent groups. I think all you can do is advocate for your own family values. And if you... if there's a party happening, you might approach the parents and saying, is there going to be alcohol there? And then you decide as a family with your family rules, whether or not you want your child to be attending that party, and then teaching your child, you know, protective behaviours, and how they're going to navigate certain situations. And in the end, when it comes to things like whether it's alcohol or drugs or anything like that, the number one rule is, because in the end, Beverly, I cannot control or know in advance what my child is going to be exposed to at someone else's house. I just can't. You know, at some point I have to let my children go and have sleepovers or go to parties, and I can't be there to watch what is going to unfold. So all I can do in the end is have a great relationship with my child, that if they get in over their head and they make a bad judgment call, that they know that they can call me and they will not get in trouble. Because I want my child to know that they can call me if their best friend has, you know, passed out drunk, or they've smoked something or taken something and they feel really sick. I want them to know that they can call me and I will come and get them, and they're not going to get a lecture in the car on that car ride home. That's what it comes down to, because as I said, I don't know. I can't control every aspect of what my child's going to be exposed to, whether that is watching porn at someone's house or being involved in some kind of online bullying against someone else, or drinking or drugs or anything like that. And this stuff is hard, but the more we talk about it, I think it helps parents put a plan in place of what they would do.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. That lack, that's kind of not having that judgment in the first instance, is probably going to go a long way to having that conversation later about what happened. Let's go to Ella, who's in Castlemaine in Victoria. Welcome to Life Matters, Ella. What's your story, or what do you want to ask about?
Oh, hi. I just wanted to talk about a slightly different situation where some when I was a child, some parents offered me quite a lot of support because I didn't have such a great situation at home, but they didn't broach that with my parents at all. And then years later, when I was speaking to them, they said, we didn't want to confront you about it, and we didn't want to confront your parents about it, because we just wanted our house to be the safe space that you could come to without having to sort of explain anything, and we just wanted you to be welcome all the time. And so that was sort of an example, I guess, of some parents making a decision about not confronting and not talking about an issue, because that was actually the best outcome. And then I went to their house all the time. I used to sleep over there all the time. And it was really great for me. But I didn't know they'd done that until I was an adult and spoke to them much later in life.
That's such a beautiful thing, Ella, that you had those safe people to go to. And what impact do you think? How much did that help you looking back?
Well, when I was young, you know, sort of 12, 13, 14, I just thought I had been really clever. I just thought I had everything sorted out, and that I had my teachers sort of wrapped around my little finger, because I would sign all of my notes and I would, you know, sign all of my homework. And I thought that all my friends' parents just thought I was awesome because I could go to their house whenever I liked. But it wasn't until I was much older that I realized that everyone was actually just really working quite hard to look after me. And they all knew what was going on, but they didn't make it harder for me, which I think was really beautiful.
That's a beautiful example of community taking care of you, Ella, when you were too young to do that yourself. Thank you very much for sharing and calling in. Beck Sparrow, you're listening to that. I'd love to get your thoughts on that caller as well.
Oh, that makes me want to cry, because I think that, you know, we worry so much sometimes about who our kids are playing with, or we forget the power of being of the village, and of being a great family or a safe place for our kids' friends to come to. And I love that that happened. Was it Ella? Was that
yes,
the lady's
name?
Yes,
that was Ella, yes.
Ella? I mean, I love that for Ella. And how amazing to be that family for another child. And even on a lesser level, I say to parents all the time, be the house. Be the house the kids come to. If you're an engaged parent, be the house that the kids have the sleepovers and do all the gaming. Because if you're an engaged parent and you're willing to sort of have an extra set of eyes, you know, just keeping an eye on things that they're not doing anything inappropriate, it is so worth being the safe place the kids can hang out with. And yes, it's a bit more work. And yes, it means you're going to have to have more snacks on hand and soft drinks and whatever else. But it's really worth it. And for other kids to then have some normalcy, to at least see some other kids who are coming from less than ideal family situations, to then have a different place where they can see a normal family dynamic operating, and also a place where they can feel safe. I mean, that's everything. Mm. This is exactly what we want, actually, with our parenting, rather than the combative approach.
Mm. I mean, I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I definitely had that safe house from one of my very good friends in high school, and it has been very, very valuable. You know, we're friends to this day, so it is really important. Let's go to James in Sydney. Welcome to Life Matters, James. What do you want to say? I think you have some thoughts on parents' behavior during kids' sport.
Yeah, thank you. It's an interesting discussion. My thought was just when one parent is singing out something like the concentrate, 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 or focus, 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 I think was the example, just sing out, don't focus, have fun. I don't know if every example needs to have a confrontation between the parent and the parents. I think that if the parent just, and I've seen it sort of done, where the parent sort of puts out their value rather than what's being done, that's also a way of confronting it, and it will probably lead to a discussion and potentially a discussion between the team rather than the team parents rather than just the two parents. So, yeah, I just thought I'd wonder what the experts sort of thought of that idea.
Beck, what do you think? I'm kind of wondering, I like it, but I wonder if it might just become a shouting match between two groups of parents.
Yeah, look, I love it as an idea, absolutely. And I think, look, until you're in this situation and you can sort of see the vibe, you don't really know. But I definitely think there's some situations where, you know, one parent's yelling out, you know, pay attention, focus. And if another parent's yelling out, you know, have fun, great job or whatever, brilliant. You know, if we can solve these things without confrontation, I think that's gold. But this is why we're seeing so many kids' sports have quiet rounds where the parents aren't allowed to yell out anything.
Oh, wow.
Right?
I didn't
because
know
we
that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's now rules where parents are being told you are to yell out nothing.
Gosh, parents.
Because it's so contentious.
Wow. That's so interesting. James, thank you for your call. I just, you know, it's a bit stunning, actually, to hear the kind of the extent that we have to take care of ourselves and try to be better people. Very, very interesting. I got a text here, Beck, backing you up a little bit. They've said, I'm a teacher and a mother of four. As a teacher, de-escalating initial parent reactions is a full-time part of my role. Schools are investing so much time and money into student well-being. However, there are some significant issues at the family level that we as a society need to address. Children often behave in the way that is modeled to them at home. You're someone who is in schools a lot, Beck. How is this landing with you?
Oh, I think that's completely true. And I think that, look, even if we look at from a technology point of view with social media, right, and that's happening younger and younger, that I'm going into schools and I'll see kids who are in grade 2, 7 years old on Snapchat, right? So what we're seeing is then kids bullying each other, all kinds of bad behavior happening at night or on weekends. And then I'm seeing parents throw that problem over to the school as if the school's got to sort it out on a Monday morning. And I think as parents, we need to step up and take responsibility for what's happening with our children and how they're behaving and decisions that we're making. You know, particularly around tech, Beverly, it's not schools who are signing 8-year-olds up to Snapchat.
No.
It's parents, right? And yet then suddenly we're expecting schools to sort out, oh, well, they, you know, ganged up on this person on Snapchat last night, or they did this on whatever, kids' Facebook Messenger, whatever it is. And I just think, you know, what that teacher is saying is that it comes down to your family values and also decisions that we are making at home and what we're modeling. Right. We know that the more that parents gossip, just as an example, the more that a parent gossips, the more likely a kid will be gossiping at school. What are we modeling? Let's think about that.
How interesting. You know, we're talking about how parents get along and the impact on children. You know, in the primary school years, parents play such a strong role as social gatekeepers and arrangers. And you necessarily get to know other parents that way. But it's really hard to get to know parents when your children get more independent in those teen high school years. It makes it more difficult to keep track of what your kids are up to. How do you handle that if you actually don't know the parents of your children's friends?
Look, I think that's where we have to step up and make an effort. Now, I'm not saying that you then have to go and have these other parents over for a barbecue, but I think, you know, the first time your child maybe goes somewhere, if you've driven them, walking up to the door and introducing yourself, it's, you know, if your child's going to a party and you've never met these other parents before, making a phone call and introducing yourself and saying, hi.
But how
I'm
do you get
wondering.
The phone number?
Well, I think that's a negotiation you have with your child, that if they want to go to that party, you want to be able to ring the parents. Mm-hmm. And I know that's so awkward, but I think that in 2024, we don't know what's going down anymore in other people's homes. So I think it's that. Now, let's say someone's listening and they're going, you are being so unrealistic. My child, my 14-year-old's never going to tell me who, what house they're going to. They're never going to let me find out. I mean, I would have great concerns about sending a 14-year-old, for example, off to a party where I didn't know where they were going, who was going to be there, and were there going to be parents there. Mm. Like, that's a red flag. Like, at what point are we going, that's okay? I don't think that's okay.
What
like,
if
don't we want to know?
I certainly would, speaking for myself as a parent. Beck, if you're on the end of judgment from another parent, how do you handle that?
Oh, isn't that the worst?
It's tough.
So difficult. It is tough. And I think, look, in an ideal world, we want to hear what the person's saying and then respond with, thank you for telling me. I'm going to do some digging on that and I will get back to you, right? Rather than our initial response, I think, is usually, how very dare you? And I don't think my child would do that. And I think that's a mistake. I just think it's a mistake to always assume our children are perfect. It's putting way too much pressure on them. Nobody is perfect. Everybody at some point has behaved like a jerk at school or at work or because we've turned up in a bad mood. So I just think if we can, we hear what the parent is saying and then we go, thanks for telling me. I'm going to have discussions about this and I will get back to you. If we can do that, then we can get our thoughts together rather than getting into a slanging match with another parent.
Beck, we've been talking a lot about how things can go wrong when parents intervene in conflicts between children. But when is it, I think we should really cover this, when is the moment when parents actually should get involved? What should they do? Because, you know, there are moments where that is required.
Definitely. And I think, Beverly, one of the reasons we're seeing parents go rogue, like behave badly, is sometimes they feel let down by school. And when they have situations, for example, of bullying, let's say, and I was on the Queensland Government's bullying task force several years ago, and there were a lot of stories where parents and children have repeatedly gone to a school and a school has not stepped up, you know, and that's not okay because a child has a right to be safe at school. And I get it then. I'm not condoning it. But gee, I understand it when then a parent is walking into the school grounds and saying, leave my child alone, you know? So I think in those situations, when is it okay to step up and advocate for your child in that way? Really when you think that they are in danger, I think. Now, ideally, I want parents to go to the school to handle these matters because they're going to be less hot-headed and emotional. But if you think that your child is in danger, then absolutely you need to step in. And I think as well, I just think in situations where you have found out that your child has been, you know, been served alcohol without your knowledge, been exposed to drug taking without your knowledge, whatever's happened, I think we have a way, in the same way that I teach teenagers, you can assert a boundary, you can be calm and kind but strong, and you can say, I'm not comfortable, as our family is not comfortable with that, unfortunately my child won't be able to go to any more parties at your house, or whatever it is. But I think if we want our kids to be able to handle conflict and negotiate conflict, we have to model that. And that means not losing our minds and screaming at people and being abusive and being awful, but being able to assert a boundary and address a conflict in a reasonable way and get our message across. But absolutely when it comes to bullying, you want to be going to the school and you keep speaking to the school or the education department or the police, if it's cyberbullying or whatever it is, until something is done about it. And that's when I would encourage parents to step up. Your job is to advocate for your child and to keep them safe.
Beck Sparrow, it's been great talking to you. It's been a really lively and interesting conversation. Thank you for taking the time. Beck Sparrow is a teen educator and author, and listen out for her because she's the host of the upcoming special season of Parental as Anything Teens. You can find that on the ABC Listen app. It will be out in April. Subscribe now by going to that app, searching for it, tapping the heart, and it will just pop up in your feed when it's released. Beck Sparrow, thank you so much.
Thank you, Beverly. I've loved this morning's conversation.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.